Service, National Radio Club.
Welcome to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for November 2008. This is issue number 284. If you'd like to write to us at the DX Audio Service, the address is 706 McKenzie Drive. That's McKenzie Drive, Lima, Ohio, 45805-1835. Telephone number is 360-382-1957. Email is sales, S-A-L-E-S, at nrcdxas.org. A subscription to the DX Audio Service for you as a Canadian member is $28. To Europe and elsewhere, it's $40. Tapes are sent via first-class mail, and you keep your cassettes. To subscribe, make a check payable to the National Radio Club Incorporated and send them to me at the address that is mentioned, or log on to our website at www.nrcdxas.org and sign up using our PayPal credit card system. Hey, you can also sign up to EDXN and get your DX Audio Service on your computer or iPod player and stereo. A subscription to EDXN is only $15. Just point your browser to http://www.e-dxn.com and subscribe online with our PayPal credit card system, or contact Wayne Heinen at Post Office Box 473-251, Aurora, Colorado 80047-3251 if you want to pay by check. Okay, kiddies, time to fly on down to Fort Worth, Texas. Here's the Switchmeister, Bill Hale.
This is the AM Switch.
Thanks, Fred, and welcome everyone to AM Switch for the DX Audio Service for November 2008. First of all, as always, call letter changes, and we've got a boatload of them this time, so sharpen your pencils. On 780, WCXH in Monticello, Maine has changed to WXME. This is a construction permit from 710. The station reportedly moved to 780 last year, but they continue to show up as a construction permit in the FCC records. Moving on, 820, WWWB in Frederick, Maryland has changed to WWFD. 850 KWOF Waterloo, Iowa, they've made the change to KXGM. 1050 WFED in Silver Spring, Maryland, their call sign now is WTOP. 1130 KRUD Honolulu, Hawaii, their new call is KPHI. 1150 and 1650 in El Paso have traded calls. The 1150 goes from KSVE to KHRO. And KHRO on 1650 made the change to KSVE. 1200 WEMM Huntington, West Virginia now is WRWB. 1240 WMJQ Cross City, Florida, they made the switch to WZCC. 1260 WBUD Trenton, New Jersey is now known as WFJS. 1340 KIST in Santa Barbara, California made the switch to KCLU, and that means California Lutheran University. 1360 WPTT McKeesport, Pennsylvania, their new call WMNY, they have a construction permit moving to 910 kHz at Mount Lebanon. 1370 KALN Iola, Kansas, their new call KIOL. On 1380 kHz WFCL in Clintonville, Wisconsin, they've taken up the call of WOTE, which means Wisconsin's Oldies 1380. Well, last month we reported a new station in Middletown, New York had taken the call of WZCC, but a couple of days after our deadline, they changed their call to WMJQ. On 1420, WACT Tuscaloosa, Alabama has changed to WENN. 1440 WJJB Westbrook, Maine, their new call is WRED. 1490 WRTN Berlin, New Hampshire, their new call is WKDR. 1500 WWWT in Washington, D.C., they've changed their call to WFED. A new station on 1500 in Palm Springs, Florida is now known as WVAA. 1520 WLKM Three Rivers, Michigan, their new call WRCI. 1520 KMAV Mayville, North Dakota, pencil in KMSR for their new call. 1570 KSXT Loveland, Colorado, their new call KPIO. Moving on to construction permits, which have taken to the air over the past month. 630 KUAM in Agana, Guam. Their construction permit for U1, 10,000 watts during the day, 1,000 watts at night, is on, moving from 612 kilohertz. 640 KFI Los Angeles, the CP for U1, 50,000 watts day and night from their new tower, has signed on at 5:07 Pacific time on September 25th. Remember, they were down because a light plane hit their tower a couple of 3 years ago. 780 WAVA Arlington, Virginia, normally 5,000 watts daytime only, non-directional. They're now operating under a special temporary authority with 2,500 watts until an antenna problems can be resolved. 1010 WPPI Sauk Rapids, Minnesota. Their CP for U4, that's two different patterns, 1,700 watts during the day, 240 watts at night, is now on from four towers, using two during the day and three at night from there, and their format is oldies. 1080 WALD Johnsonville, South Carolina, a CP for 9,000 watts, daytime only, non-directional, and 2,700 watts critical hours is now on, increasing their day power. And they have also added the critical hours operation, moving from Walterboro at a new tower. 1330 KXLJ, Juneau, Alaska. New station is now on the air with 10,000 watts during the day, 3,000 watts at night, all non-directional. 1330 KOVE, Lander, Wyoming. A CP for 5,000 watts during the day, 250 watts at night is on, reducing the night power and going non-directional. On 1450 WWSC Glens Falls, New York, CP is now on for 1,000 watts during the day, 940 watts at night from a new shorter tower. 1490 KWOK Hoquiam, Washington, they're now on with 1,000 watts during the day, 820 watts at night, all non-directional. 1590 WCSL Cherryville, North Carolina, they're now on with 10,000 watts during the day, 30 watts at night. 1640 KDIA Vallejo, California, they're now on with 10,000 watts day and night, directional at night, that's U2, increasing that night power, of course. The new directional pattern shoots a long lobe out south-southwest out into the Pacific Ocean. And a little out of order, but 1580 WPGY LEJ Georgia, CP is now on for 500 watts, daytime only, moving from 1560. Well, some actions from the FCC and CRTC up in Canada. 540 WLIE Islip, New York, a CP has been granted for U5, 4,000 watts, 4,100 watts during the day, 175 watts at night. U5 means directional daytime only, non-directional at night. 1010, a new station in Hanakei, Hawaii, has been granted 50,000 watts during the day, 10,000 watts at night, all non-directional. 1030 WNVR, Vernon Hills, Illinois, a CP has been granted for 10,000 watts during the day, 120 at night, 3,200 watts during critical hours. Their antenna designation is U7, which means three different patterns. 1130 KPHI Honolulu, a CP has been granted for U1, 1,000 watts, day and night. 1230 KXOL Central California, a CP has been granted for 830 watts daytime, 1,000 watts at night, non-directional from a new tower, using a folded unipole antenna. 1230 WESX, Nahant, Massachusetts, CP has been granted for U1, 450 watts day and night, moving the city of license from Salem. 1270 WTJZ, Newport News, Virginia, CP has been granted for 15,000 watts daytime, 1,800 watts at night, U4, that's two different patterns. 1330 WKTA, Evanston, Illinois, they've been granted a CP for 5,000 watts daytime, 110 watts at night, using two patterns, that's U4. 1350 KTIK, Nampa, Idaho, the CP has been granted for U2, 25,000 watts during the day, 600 watts at night, increasing that daytime power. 1380 WABH, Bath, New York, they've been granted a CP for 10,000 watts during the day, 450 watts at night, two patterns. They will add a tower to their standing two and use all three, all hours of the day. 1430, a new station has been granted in Marquette, Michigan for U2, 50,000 watts during the day, 2,000 watts at night, using two towers. 1450, also a new station, this time in Tonopah, Nevada. They've been granted 1,000 watts during the day, 750 watts at night. And lo and behold, another new station on 1520, Thunderbolt, Georgia. This new station, not yet on the air, had a CP for U4, 50,000 watts during the day, 700 watts at night, but after applying for this change in city of license from Savannah and the new facilities, they've been granted U7, 50,000 watts daytime, 780 watts at night, 15,000 watts during critical hours from six towers, using all six all hours. The three patterns are identical in shape. They're all headed to the southeast, but of course different in size. 1570 WBGX Harvey, Illinois. A CP has been granted for 1,100 watts daytime, 500 watts at night, U4, increasing the daytime power by 100 watts. More significant is the fact the day pattern is being skewed about 30 degrees east from the current lobe, which directs the signal almost due north, plus two smaller lobes to the east and west are eliminated from this daytime pattern. And 1600 WXMY, Saltville, Virginia. A CP has been granted for U1, 23,000 watts daytime, 11 watts at night, increasing day power and adding that night operation. Well, here's a new category that we've seen a couple of times. Translator actions. Yep, the FCC is going along with the idea of putting AM signals on FM translators to fill in the areas where the AM signal is depleted or diminished. The latest couple of notes here, one locally for me on 660 KSKY in Balch Springs, Texas, which is a suburb of Dallas. Three construction permits have been granted to augment the KSKY's signal, which they have convinced the FCC is being overrun by Mexican stations operating illegally at night. The application states, and we quote, "The Mexican stations are notified to and accepted for nighttime operation with power levels limited to 1 kilowatt. However, both stations appear to be operating with a nighttime power level on the order of 50 kilowatts. Mitigation efforts of both the FCC and KSKY AM with the Mexican government and the offending stations have been unsuccessful. Therefore, the applicant herein seeks extraordinary relief from the interference by proposing to retransmit the KSKY AM programming on three low-power FM repeaters throughout the nighttime loss area to restore lost service to the public," end of quote. One station is on 92.9 in the Dallas area. One station is 95.5 located northeast of downtown Fort Worth. And one station is on 92.1 in Arlington. That 95.5 station northeast of downtown Fort Worth is only a couple of miles from my house here. I've been in contact with a consulting engineer on that, and he claims that there are no call letters or call signs assigned to those three repeaters. So we're just left with KSKY FM 1, 2, and 3, I guess. Also, 1660 WXXY Dover, Delaware. They're now simulcasting on W254AT 98.7 in Smyrna, Delaware. Applications for new stations, will run down a few of those this month. 1220 Desert Hot Springs, California. They've applied for U4, 1400 watts during the day and 1200 watts at night. 1340 Bethel Heights, Arkansas has applied for 1000 watts day and night, non-directional. Also on 1340 Garden City, Kansas has applied for 1,000 watts daytime, 880 watts at night, non-directional. 1370, Heflin, Florida, application is for 250 watts day and night, directional nighttime only, that's U2. 1400, Excel, Alabama has applied for 1,000 watts day and night, non-directional. Also on 1400, Middleton, Idaho, they've applied for 1,000 watts day and night, non-directional. And finally, 1450, Hellendale, California has applied for 250 watts day and night, non-directional. Some applications that have been dismissed. A new station on 820 in Escanaba, Michigan had a CP for a new station, but that's been canceled per the applicant's request. Another dismissal on 1100 Albert Lea, Minnesota. Hometown Broadcasting has returned the construction permit for a new station in Albert Lea. Since the FCC originally granted the CP, Hometown bought KQAQ 970 in Austin to operate alongside KQPR 96.1 in Albert Lea. The 1100 facility would have required construction of seven towers southeast of Albert Lea. And 1350, a new station that had been granted in Raymond, Washington. The permit has been canceled per the applicant's request. Two more stations are exiting to FM in Canada, CHVO, Spaniards Bay, Newfoundland. They've signed off for good and is now heard solely on 103.9 MHz. And 1090 CKKW, Kitchener, Ontario. The CRTC has approved the move of CKKW to 99.5 MHz with only 2.1 kilowatts, and that will provide a significant coverage reduction from the AM signal. Well, odds and ends from here and there, returning to the airwaves this past month, KSXT 1570, Loveland, Colorado, with Religion. Reported as off, WRAG 590, Carrollton, Alabama, KABA 1020, Eagle River, Alaska, KIMB, Kimball, Nebraska, on 1260, WTYL 1290, Tylertown, Mississippi, KGLD 1330, Tyler, Texas, and KGBC 1540, Galveston, Texas. The Peoria Star Journal Online reports that radio stations WOAM 1350 and WPMJ FM are now off the air in Peoria. The two radio stations, 1350 Oldies and WPMJ 94.3, are now off the air according to station owner Bob Kelly. The staff was informed that the two stations would leave the air. Roger Monroe, co-host of WOAM's Breakfast with Royce and Roger, said, "We're devastated," he said. "We know the station wasn't setting records, but we've got an excellent audience." He said the word that the stations have been in financial difficulty has been circulating for over a year. The stations have been up for sale for years, and he, quoting Kelly once again, "We thought the announcement was announcing a buyer." One fine to report this month, WJHX 620 Lexington, Alabama, has been fined $12,800 for failure to file for renewal in a timely manner and subsequent unauthorized operation, plus public inspection file violations. Well, my thanks go out to Sean Axelrod, Wayne Heinen, Dean McIntyre, Larry Marshall, Dave Schmidt, Jerry Starr, Radio World Online, and Upper Midwest Broadcasting for news and tidbits this month. And now, returning from an unsuccessful bid to have Ice Road Truckers filmed on Tampa Bay, here's John Balker with this next installment of the Travelogue. National
Radio Club. Well, thanks very much, Bill Hale, and hello, everybody. Welcome to the Travelogue. National Radio Club. Well, let's see. You know, we've been hop, skipping, and jumping all around the country, mostly in the eastern half of the country, I must admit, with this latest series of Travelogue programs that we've done for you. But it's taken on its own new life, and I am so happy to be doing this program now. You know, if you compare, Mark Durenberger, for instance, has been focusing his attention on the mega stations, the Clear Channel stations, the ones that are heard all over the country and that carry an awful lot of significant weight when it comes to media coverage of events around the countryside and around the world. Whereas the recent Travelogue programs I've been doing for you focus on the smaller stations in the smaller communities. Well, what's the good for that? I really don't know, but I can tell you this. I had more fun working on the smaller stations than I did working, for instance, at KNBR in San Francisco for a short time. As you go to the smaller stations, you have a little more freedom of activity. And, of course, you're trying to prove yourself and be heard by some mogul from the big city. But still and all, it's a great way to grow into broadcasting, these smaller stations. And some of them sound fantastic, as you're hearing as we go along. Now, today we're going to cover a part of the country that is very familiar to me. I grew up in New England. I grew up in Vermont. I think I've said that 100,000 times. But we're going to be covering the southeastern portion of Massachusetts, better known as Cape Cod. In fact, we're going to go way out on Cape Cod to start our program today, and work our way back, if you will, toward the mainland. I don't think that's quite what they call it, but that's okay. as we begin the November 2008 DX Audio Service Travelogue.
And Jerry Weston will be along in just a little while with more music for you up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. The time is 9 o'clock, and you're tuned to the Voice of the Lower Cape, WVLC, Orleans, Cape Cod.
Well, you know, I first heard that 1170 station probably back in 1970-71, and the call letters were WKPE, and for some reason I never had a recording of WKPE, standing, of course, for Cape. And then that station morphed into what you just heard, WVLC, in the early 80s, for the Voice of the Lower Cape, as he said. And then, 1999... we heard this station at 1170 in Orleans.
Next Monday, chance of showers early on in the West Fair with highs of 75 to 80. Not so bad. Not as bad as we expected for the weekend. Minute and a half before 6 o'clock, you're listening to WUMB-FM Boston, WBPR Worcester, WFBB-FM Falmouth, and WFBB-AM Orleans at 1170 AM.
Perhaps you could guess that what happened, they joined a reading network. There were at least two of them on Cape Cod. In fact, I believe we're going to hear from another one here in a few minutes. But besides classical music and very peaceful, calm music on Sundays and readings most of the day parts, that station, by the way, was the only AM station of the ones that they had on their network. And it's the only one that they had to give the dial position so people could find it. I don't know if I should be offended by that or not. We're going to move in toward the main part of Massachusetts now to the community of West Yarmouth. And our dial is set to 1240.
This is WOCB, AM and FM in West Yarmouth, Massachusetts. The time is 4 o'clock.
WOCB and WOCB. Massachusetts.
Well, now, WOCB also matured as the years went by. Oh, and did you hear the WOCB-FM reference? By 1991, that call sign had changed to WJIB. That should ring a bell for many of you who attended the various conventions in the eastern Massachusetts and New Hampshire area. That became a very well-known call sign in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Well, very much like what happened in Orleans, things changed in West Yarmouth for its AM station and the programs it was broadcasting. And here's just a snap of their station in 1999 once again.
And we'll hear about how those risks might be reduced, also about the hundreds of thousands left homeless by that devastating earthquake. Still to come on NPR's All Things Considered starting at 4 o'clock.
From Boston University, this is 1240 WBUR AM West Yarmouth. 91.5 WSDH Sandwich, 90.7 WKKL West Barnstable, and 90.3 WCCT Harwich. WBUR is NPR News for the Cape and the Islands.
The Fed has raised two key interest rates a quarter point. The move is designed to slow the growth of the economy and dampen inflation.
You know, I don't know why, but I'm very comfortable with that kind of programming on WBUR, as they're now known, 1240 in West Yarmouth. Now, as we cross the Cape Cod Canal to get back onto the mainland of Massachusetts, we've decided we're going to take the southern route over, really, toward Rhode Island as we leave the Cape area. And the first city we come to, of any note, is New Bedford, Massachusetts. And we'll start with our dials at 1340.
1340 WNBH.
We're going to pause for station identification now before Pena steps in. This is the Boston Red Sox Radio Network.
Hi, this is Bob Starr, reminding you to join Captain Jack Peterson, First Mate Lenny, and the morning crew weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 1340 WNBH, New Bedford.
Tony Pena, ready to face Higuera. By the way, test drive the Plymouth Voyager, America's most popular mini.
And boy, that station goes back a long ways, I can tell you. As a very young kid, I can remember listening to that station way back when. Now, really, I mentioned that as we came in from the Cape, we would listen to 1340 first. But if I were geographically accurate, we have come in along a causeway from Fairhaven, Massachusetts, to get into the city of New Bedford, which is sort of on the side of a hill. And we've gone right by WBSM, which was a brand new station at 1420 on the dial when I was first aware of the station. That was about 1950. I had a friend who worked there.
It's 16 degrees in downtown New Bedford. I'm Lynn Foyant, WBSM News. And now back to Mark Williams.
The best to you from AM 1420, WBSM.
To take part in today's discussion, simply dial 996-0500.
Now, as we move vaguely to the west, this is an interesting set of call letters. W-A-L-E has appeared in three or four cities right in that one region in the last 30 years that I've been watching them. W-A-L-E started in Fall River, Massachusetts, and here it is at 1400 on the dial.
In Fall River, this is
W-A-L-E.
This is Mutual News.
Oh, and that came from the middle 1980s. But we were back in that area in 1997, tuned in to 1400, and lo and behold, a whole new radio station.
You're listening to the new 1400 WHTB Fall River.
No fundo nós portugueses ainda somos os mesmos. Ainda continuamos a navegar, sonhando encontrar Portugal.
And, of course, while we were in town, we let the dial slip up to 1480.
I'm Dick Bartley. Thanks for tuning in my rock and roll oldies show on Fall River's entertainment leader, WSAR Fall River.
The Booty Classic, the rock and roll oldies show.
Seems like the
The Boston Red Sox. The Boston Red Sox on WSAR.
Brewer pitchers have shut out the Red Sox in 26 consecutive innings.
Well, okay, now that puts us just about into the state of Rhode Island, so, you know, we may never get back down this part of Massachusetts again. Let's listen to the last stations down in this little corner of Massachusetts before we part here. First, we'll start in Middleborough, Massachusetts.
You're listening to the Massachusetts Reading Network, WVBF 1530 AM Middleborough, WJUL 91.5 FM Lowell, WNMH 91.5 FM Northfield, WBIM FM 91.5 Bridgewater, WDJM 91.3 FM Framingham, and WSHL 91.3 FM in Easton.
Now let's continue with the morning editions of our daily newspapers with today's edition of the Boston Herald.
And then comes our 1570 friend in Taunton, Massachusetts. Beautiful studio location right on the central square where everybody can see it.
You're tuned to WPEP Silver City Broadcasting from Taunton, Massachusetts.
And finally, not 5 miles from the state of Rhode Island, Attleboro, Massachusetts, right here at 1320.
Power 1320.
WARL.
Attleboro Provident.
Baby, at the point of my life.
Well, everybody, that wraps up our visit to southeastern Massachusetts. It's a great place to be, and as you heard, some of the radio there can be a lot of fun, too. Well, now, let's see, it isn't quite Thanksgiving at our house yet, probably not at yours either, but I hope you have a good one. And if by any chance, Fred, these tapes got delayed or something, well, we hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving. So you know I'm teasing, and what more can I say? But we're going to take the rest of the year off, and we're going to have a very special program in the December edition of the DX Audio Service. So we won't be seeing you anymore this year. I want to wish you the very best. Thanks for all your support and your email comments. You can always write to me by email at jbowker, that's J-B-O-W-K-E-R, and my address goes on at Tampa Bay, TAMPABAY, dot RR dot com. JBowker at TampaBay.RR.com. I'd love to hear from you. Very best to all the other editors on the program and to all of our listeners. Take care now. And it's yours, Mark.
Thank you, John, and may we be the last to wish you Halloween greetings and the first to wish you a wonderful Thanksgiving and a rewarding upcoming holiday season. Today, we'd like to spend a few minutes exploring the action of a little-known device found on most modern AM receivers and in literally all car radios. It's known generically as Dynamic Noise Reduction, or DNR. What it does, in fact, is to automatically compensate for a buildup of noise in the radio when that noise is due to a weakening signal. It creates that compensation when it senses that the station's signal is fading. Why does it do that? Well, as the station fades out, the station's ability to overcome the noise on the channel diminishes, and that noise begins to rise in the radio. And that noise is generally in the higher audio frequencies. Noise might include lightning and other static, interference from another station, or a buildup of interference in the neighborhood of the radio. It's been proven that as we use more and more microprocessor-based equipment, from computers to electronic kitchen appliances, we add more noise to the listening environment. You'll recall our tours through homes as we detect an isolated noise from common household devices. In addition, there is the steady increase in general environmental noise, from the buildup of higher capacity power lines, more and more broadcast signals, and interference from such sources as vehicle noise and radio relay towers. Dynamic noise reduction is an attempt to help filter out some of that noise at the receiver. What it does is to effectively turn down the treble tone control on your radio. As a result, a station that might sound crisp and clear in a location where the signal is strong can sound dull and muddy in another location where that station's signal is lower. It's all done in the radio automatically, and it's usually a gentle adjustment as the desired signal changes so that you don't tend to notice the change. All in all, it's a slick deal, especially in car radios, but it can make it harder to get a clear recording of a desired station from a distant tower. So let's listen to how this works. To provide a valid comparison, we'll need to hear the same program material under all conditions of varying signal strength. So just before the end of the regular baseball season this fall, we recorded the play-by-play of a Minnesota Twins baseball game from KSTP 1500 St. Paul, a 50-kilowatt 1B station. In the area in which we tested, KSTP does not suffer interference from any other stations at 1500 on the dial, so the only variable should be the diminishing strength of KSTP's signal as we drive away from the station. Our recording began when we were well within the primary coverage area in the metropolitan Minneapolis downtown. We ended up driving out about 90 miles. This was daytime, comparing the sound quality as we traveled. The recordings were taken from a Bose radio in a Mazda 6, fed into our Eterol RO9, and brought back to our workstation for evaluation. First, we'll let you hear the signal at its strongest and clearest, then additional recordings as we get farther away. Here's KSTP in its primary coverage area.
Kansas City in their final series of the year. Just finished a three-game series against the Detroit Tigers and won all three games. And the pitch popped up right side of the infield. Casilla calling for it. Alexi waiting for it to come down to the glove, and it does. And they're two away.
Now we're about 30 miles out. You may already notice a difference. The station doesn't sound quite as clear as it did.
And here's Denard Spann to lead off for the Twins facing Gil Mesh. Mesh pitching well. He's won 13 and lost 11. Last year, the Kansas City right-hander, 9-13.
Now at 60 miles. Note the general increase in the background noise. That's typical as the station's signal is decreasing. And you'll also notice the further lack of clearness as the radio's dynamic noise reduction is at work.
Mentioned the Royals with that fine 17-7 September record. A breaking pitch is in for a strike. Twins with the loss last night, they are now 10-13 in September.
And finally at 90 miles out.
And here's the set by the right-handed Baker. Checks the runner Smith at first and delivers a strike on the outside corner. And it's no balls and one strike. Another big crowd here today, over 42,000.
Now, that's probably still okay for most of us, but now let's listen again to that same piece. And then we'll suddenly cut back to the sound we heard when we were close into the tower. Notice the difference, the effect at 90 miles versus the sound of the station close in.
And here's the set by the right-handed Baker. Checks the runner Smith at first and delivers a strike on the outside corner. And it's no balls and one strike.
And the pitch popped up. Right side of the infield. Casilla calling for it. Alexi waiting for it to come down to the glove. And it does. And they're two away.
So, recognizing the effect, how can you get around it? Well, the answer is you really can't in most receivers. About the only thing you can do is to compensate by constantly adjusting the tone control on the radio. But of course, as you turn up the tone control to make it brighter, you also bring up the noise. So, here's KSTP again at 90 miles out, but this time we're going to start with the dynamic noise reduction in the normal mode, and then turn up the tone control to sharpen the sound.
And here's the set by the right-handed Baker. Checks the runner Smith at first and delivers a strike on the outside corner, and it's no balls and one strike.
Another big crowd here today, over 42,000, watching the Twins and the Royals in the final game of the regular season. And Baker working now in a one-strike delivery to Alex Gordon, and here's the pitch. Strike two, very same spot. And Baker now ahead at 0-2.
I'm not sure which I'd prefer, a muddier sound or the crisper audio with the added noise. And of course, that will vary from station to station. Now, add to that the fact that by turning up the highs, we're also making the recording more susceptible to other forms of occasional interference. For example, the sound of lightning or the hash we might get when driving under a power line. Here's another way to compare. Another Twins broadcast recorded during the evening on a radio where we could adjust the bandwidth. First, we hear the station with the bandwidth all the way open, and then after a few seconds, we'll switch in the effect of the noise reduction.
Right-handed hitting Miguel Olivo with a swing and a miss. Off-speed breaking pitch right in there for a strike. And Olivo with a big cut, but he missed it. And it's strike one. Two on for the Royals. Lead runner.
The second base is Tien. Back-to-back base hits by Tien and Butler. And they have runners at first and second. Leadoff batter Sheely went out on a fly ball to right. After the back-to-back hits.
So in this case, dynamic noise reduction does have some value for the casual listener, and it can be a good tool. I wanted to bring this to your attention so you don't think you're losing your hearing when you're in a situation like this. It's coming from the radio. One other interesting thing. KSTP is at 1500, and at that end of the dial, stations seem prone to skywave earlier in the day than seems to be the case at the other end. As our trip continued, we were out at about 150 miles when we recorded this snip. Remember, this is mid-afternoon, and notice the skywave fade.
Activity in the bullpen right now. Cleveland open game underway, no score after one. Seattle batting in the bottom of first against the Yankees, and no score by the Bombers in the top of the first.
Now to another topic. We're all hearing about the success of the latest niche hobby, that of ultralight DXing. And as you know, the ultralight crowd is proud of their success using simple pocket-sized radios, not communications receivers or other larger sets. I once thought that the criteria for ultralight credit had to be reception unaided by other antennas or loops, simply the radio in your pocket. But recently, the ultralight folks have suggested there are things you can do to boost performance, such as antennas or loops. So perhaps this is a good time to review some comments we made on a column on antenna tricks, broadcast back in April of 2002. Simply put, the idea was to help yourself when you were limited in the space you had to put up an antenna. We suggested winding a coil of wire on a form such as a piece of PVC pipe. That coil creates an electrical component that adds an effective length to the antenna wire. We demonstrated with a short piece of vertical wire that we could dramatically improve reception when we inserted the coil between the short wire and the receiver. But that implied that the radio had an antenna input jack, and many radios, including most ultralights, don't have such a jack. But they do have an internal loop, sometimes known as a ferrite loop stick. All radios need some help in picking up distant AM signals. Without this internal loop, they'd be essentially deaf to all but the strongest local stations. That internal loop stick found in almost every radio is actually a coil of wire wound on a small rod. As such, it assumes the properties of that coil of wire, and one of those properties is a sensitivity to radio signals traveling through the air. But the coils in these radios also have a property known as directionality. And what we're saying is that these coils or loops are sensitive to signals that arrive broadside to them. That's why you have to orient your radio set for the strongest signal, or to minimize noise pickup. Because the loop is mounted across the back of the radio is sensitive to signals from the front and rear. Okay so far? Now a couple of tricks. If you're recording a station over a long period of time and you're worried about signal fade, you want to make sure the radio is pointed for maximum signal from the station. But we find when we rotate the radio back and forth toward the station, it's sometimes hard to tell what's the exact best pointing direction, because the signal seems to be good over a broad range of pointing of the radio. So let's use what we'll call the nulling method, and it's quite simple and should be pretty intuitive. You set the radio down and you rotate the radio until the desired signal is the weakest. That's much easier to pinpoint. Once you have that exact direction where the signal is the weakest, you simply rotate the radio left or right, 90 degrees or a right angle. You now have the radio pointed in the exact direction of the desired signal. Now another trick, and many of you are doing this now. Our April 2002 column discussed the advantage of placing the radio up against that coil that we built. A related suggestion is for those of you who may have loop antennas, but with ultralights, no way to plug the loop into the radio. I know you're way ahead of me. Place the ultralight radio against the loop antenna. From what we now know about the internal loop in the radio, we know that best reception can be obtained when you place the flat side of the radio against the flat side of the loop. Try it and you'll see what we mean. Further information on ultralight tricks can be found on the website www.dxer.ca. And now a final note. We referenced that April 2002 column because it turned up in a recent search about improving performances in places where we didn't have the ability to put out a Sirius antenna. That column, we're told, was one of the highlights in a file folder of previously broadcast band scan information. And because next month, the Dernberger Bandscan marks the 10th year of our association with the DX Audio Service, Fred and the editors have graciously allowed us time to do a sort of best-of retrospect. We'll pull out and we'll rebroadcast excerpts from some of the more interesting of previous Bandscan columns. Hope it'll be fun for you. Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service. Until we meet again, good listening, DXers.
Hello, sports fans and DXers. Ken Anisjuk back here. And in the Chicago Tribune article on Sunday, September 14th, we have a little history lesson here that might steal a little bit of thunder from our editor, Fred, but I think you'd like to know about this, and he would too. 10 things you might not know about Chicago radio. Chicago radio is constantly being retuned. Just last week, in early September, National Public Radio confirmed a deal to make a TV plot out of the Chicago-based radio show Wait, don't tell me. And sports talker Mike North recently left The Score 670 and started a show on the restaurant's internet site. Here's more about the Windy City's airwaves. 1. On November 8, 1921, soprano Mary Garden helped radio station KYW test its transmitter in preparation for its groundbreaking broadcast of opera. Garden stood on the stage of the Auditorium Theater inside a tent to set up a reduced echo with a single light bulb for illumination, which explains why the first words ever spoken on Chicago radio were Garden saying, "My God, but it's dark in here." 2. In radio's early days, the science of broadcasting was poorly understood by the public and news media. Signals were believed to travel through an invisible ether. Radio and ether were synonyms in headlines, and the phrase "crash the ether" meant to make a radio broadcast. 3. The most famous radio news account ever, Chicago broadcaster Herb Morrison's description of the explosion of the airship Hindenburg in Lakehurst, New Jersey for WLS in 1937. 4. Jack L. Cooper, a pioneering black disc jockey with WSBC, earned six-figure salary in the mid-1940s. Serving Chicago's growing black population, many of whom had arrived from the South, Cooper offered an on-air missing persons service to help people reconnect with family and friends. 5. The call letters of Chicago radio stations reflected their missions. The Tribune's outlet was and is WGN, world's greatest newspaper. Sears Roebuck & Company sponsored WLS, the world's largest store. WVON was once the voice of the Negro. 6. Chicago once had a station called WJBT, where Jesus blesses thousands. 7. A Chicago radio interview with Yankees outfielder Jake Powell in 1938 went sour when he used a racial epithet in telling broadcaster Bob Elson that he stayed in shape during the offseason by working as a police officer, cracking, quote, blacks over the head. Powell was suspended and performed penance by visiting Harlem taverns and making apologies. 8. Years before Ray Kroc founded the McDonald hamburger chain, he was a staff pianist at radio station WGES, that would be 1490, in Oak Park. 9. Many of Steve Dahl's Chicago antics are well known, such as Disco Demolition Night at Comiskey Park, 1979, and the play-by-play of his own vasectomy. And finally, 10, the real name of Chicago radio icon Paul Harvey is Paul Harvey Orant. And that's the rest of the story.
It's time for a pattern change. Or at least to flip over your tape for more of the DX audio service.